Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point. The redacted Mueller report is out to the public. Since it dropped a little after 11 a.m. Eastern, reporters, lawyers, and curious regular folks have been turning the 448 pages. Among the findings, President Trump ordered aides to pressure then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions to resign. When told of the appointment of Special Counsel Mueller, Trump said, "This is the end of my presidency." Attorney General William Barr said it was his job to make the call that the president did not obstruct justice. This afternoon, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Democrat Jerry Nadler said, "Not so fast."
The special counsel made clear that he did not exonerate the president, and the responsibility now falls to Congress to hold the president accountable for his actions.
This hour, On Point, a special live broadcast of On Point, breaking down the Mueller report. Join us. What's your takeaway from the Mueller report? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. To begin, in Washington, Josh Gerstein is a senior legal affairs contributor to Politico. He's joining us for this conversation. Welcome, Josh.
Hey, Kimberly, good to be with you.
So after a full day of parsing this report, what is your biggest takeaway?
Well, I think if you take the whole report together, the more than 400 pages that were released on both collusion and obstruction, it's a very damning narrative overall. There are so many instances where the president attempted to take actions that seem to have been intended to interfere with the investigation, that when you take it all together, it's an incredible collection of conduct that at a very minimum seems unwise and unethical. Whether it amounts to criminal activity is a little bit more complicated and nuanced. There seems to be a disagreement here between Attorney General Bill Barr and the special counsel Robert Mueller on whether it fits into that box or not. Mueller doesn't come right out and say that it does for a variety of reasons, while Barr seems eager to dismiss that notion and did so publicly again today. So I think going forward, we're going to see a little bit more of a public conflict in some fashion between those two men. That said, while I think the overarching narrative is really a negative one for the White House, there are only, I think, a few incidents that are described here that we had no inkling of before, thanks to media reports. For the most part, what the report does is add, unfavorable details to some of those anecdotes that we were already aware of from press accounts.
Yeah, Josh, you were anticipating my question. It was going to be, were there any surprises in this? And were you surprised even by the level of redactions? We in the media weren't sure how much Attorney General Barr would black out of this report. Seems by and large that the description of minimal redactions was more or less true.
Right. I wasn't terribly surprised by that because I thought that the flap about that going into this was a little bit overblown. I also thought we'd see the redactions eventually, and then we could all discuss whether they were appropriate or not. It seems like there were more redactions in the portion of the report that talks about collusion with the Russians. That may be understandable due to the cases that were brought in that area against various Russian actors due to the fact that it may contain still sensitive intelligence information. But there were really very, very few redactions in the obstruction section of the report. So I think that controversy, even though there are some Democrats that are still demanding to see the redacted material, the Justice Department has said they'll start to make a less redacted version of the report available to members of Congress starting at the beginning of next week. So right. I don't think we're going to see as big a battle over that as some people had expected.
Right. Attorney General Barr notified members of Congress tonight that they would get that less redacted version of the report. After the report was released, very soon after the report was released, President Trump himself reacted. He was speaking in the White House East Room to participants of the Wounded Warrior Project Soldier Ride.
No collusion, no obstruction. I'm happy.
There never was, by the way, and there never will be.
So for a while, the president has, particularly on the issue of collusion, have been saying, you know, slam dunk, taking a victory lap, saying that this report found no collusion. The report itself actually says, though, that, quote, collusion is not a specific offense or theory of liability found in the U.S. Code. It goes on to say, for that reason, this office's focus is resolving the question of joint criminal liability, and it was on conspiracy as defined by federal law. Was that a way of Mueller saying, well, I didn't say that there was no collusion?
To a degree, I think that that's right. I mean, I think from the outset, I think folks in the legal sphere have understood that collusion here really meant some kind of illegal conspiracy. In the lay sense of, you know, meaning contact with or some sort of joint undertaking with somebody else, we've all known for a long time that there was some degree of collusion. If you look at the Trump Tower meeting that was attended by, you know, a half dozen Trump campaign officials, where at least some of them went into it knowing that they were going to be getting or expecting they were going to be getting derogatory information about Hillary Clinton, that appears to be at least some kind of interaction with Russian nationals to get information that would be helpful to the campaign. So that I think that was already fairly well established. Mueller's team sort of picks that apart and says that from a legal perspective, it'd be very difficult to charge anybody with a crime for having attended that meeting. For one thing, you'd have to show that they knew what they were doing was illegal under the federal election laws, and that would be difficult. And also this question of whether giving somebody information is really the same as making a donation to a campaign is one that's very uncertain legally. And so the Mueller folks said that that was really a non-starter in terms of a charge.
Yeah. I want to get to some calls here. Ray is calling from Ramsey, New Jersey. Hi there, Ray.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I think... a lot of people are a little disappointed at potentially the buildup that was that we've been waiting for maybe 6 months, 4 months, even the last month. Even though everybody on the right and the Trump administration said that there was no collusion, I think the media built it up to such a degree that we really expected something. We really expected to see some evidence of the Trump campaign or the Trump administration working with a Russian official, working with a Russian agency. Your last guest just mentioned the meeting in Trump Tower where they were trying to dig up dirt on Hillary Clinton for campaign purposes. Clearly, there's not a culpable crime there. That's a very common thing. I expected to get something tangible, and I don't think we saw that, and I think it's frankly a little disappointing. I'm glad it didn't happen, but I'm disappointed that the media built it up to such a degree that we really almost assumed it was true.
All right, Ray. Thanks for your comment. I want to give Josh a chance to respond.
Well, I would say that number one, it wasn't just the media. There were obviously a lot of Democrats who were fanning the flames publicly on this issue. Although it obviously did dominate, particularly on cable news, nearly wall to wall on some networks. So I can understand why people would feel that there's a disconnect here between what they thought was coming and what actually arrived. Another factor, I would say, though, in frankly making this investigation a bigger thing than it might have otherwise been, is the president's own conduct that's described in the obstruction section of the report, the way in which he repeatedly tried to fire or talked about firing his attorney general, the way he repeatedly attempted to fire the special counsel after he was appointed, leading to the White House counsel Don McGahn threatening to resign and actually going into his office and starting to box up his things because he felt that his tenure at the White House was over. So the rather extreme lengths that the president went to try to impact this investigation, whether those actions were or were not crimes, is the kind of thing where one would think, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. This is one of the issues that even Attorney General Barr has brought up. But what was the president doing exactly?
Yeah.
If he didn't think that there was any underlying crime, did that mean his actions were innocent? And that's an area where, as I said earlier, Barr and his folks and Mueller and his team seem to have some disagreement on the legalities.
Yes, Barr himself said he disagreed, and Mueller laid out 10 areas where the president potentially obstructed justice. We have a lot in this report, of course, about the action of President Trump, but Was there anything new about the actions of other folks, say Ivanka Trump or Jared Kushner or anything else? I mean, it says that Ivanka has mentioned maybe a handful of times involving discussions about emails leading up to that Trump Tower meeting, that she may have had some knowledge of that. What more do we know?
Yeah, there are some mentions of things like that. I think in connection with Jared Kushner, there's also a lot of discussion in the report about the Trump Organization's business dealings vis-a-vis Russia and who was involved in the campaign was aware that there were still efforts being made on that front. And that's presented as a potential motive for President Trump's efforts to impede or obstruct the investigation. Mueller's investigators say, you know, one of the errors, they're essentially saying, I think that one of the errors Barr made in the way he approached this, remember, he issued a memo like a year ago saying there couldn't be any obstruction here because there was appeared to be no underlying collusion. Mueller's people say that's wrong for a couple reasons. One, they think it's possible the president was trying to obstruct this investigation because he was concerned about other criminal activity being revealed, like activity by the Trump Organization, activity by his private attorney, Michael Cohen, including maybe the campaign-related payments to women who were accusing him of affairs or sexual misconduct. So, and then another thing they say is he may just have been simply trying to cover up the fact that there was an active effort by the Trump Organization to continue to pursue this Trump Tower deal in Moscow during the 2016 campaign, even though the president himself said flatly that they were not working on this during the campaign.
Just very quickly, in just 20 seconds we have left, what do you think comes next?
Well, I think we're going to continue to see Democrats on Capitol Hill pick up aspects of this obstruction investigation and of the spinoff investigations that Mueller handed off to other prosecutors and see whether they can work those into at least an impeachment-related congressional investigation and, if not, actual outright impeachment efforts.
All right. Josh Gerstein, senior legal affairs contributor to Politico, thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
And we are live talking about the Mueller report. What caught your attention in the report? I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're combing through the Mueller report and looking at what could come next. Have you exonerated the president? What about Mueller's conclusion that Russia interfered in the 2016 election in a, quote, sweeping and systematic fashion? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Victoria Nurse, a professor at Georgetown University Law Center. She's a former appellate lawyer in the Justice Department and special counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee. She was chief counsel to Vice President Joe Biden and was junior counsel to the Senate Iran-Contra Committee. Victoria, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kimberly.
And joining us from Dallas, Texas, is Jeffrey Engel. He's director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University. He's also co-author of the book Impeachment and American History. Jeffrey, welcome.
Hi, good to talk to you.
So I want to start off first with Victoria. You've had some time now to look through this report. What stood out most to you?
Well, I think what's going to be difficult for people to understand is that the special prosecutor took a very legalistic stance toward the investigation. He concluded that the president, and I'll quote from the report, I found multiple acts by the president that were capable of exerting undue influence over law enforcement investigations, including Russian interference and obstruction investigations. But he refused to come to a conclusion about whether the president could be charged, and that was largely for constitutional reasons. Mm. The Justice Department has said that a sitting president cannot be indicted because the remedy is impeachment under our Constitution. And so Mueller had his hands tied to some extent on this. And so he came to a sort of on the one hand, on the other hand, conclusion that lawyers tend toward, which is he does not conclude that the president committed a crime, but says over and over again, this report does not exonerate him, and proceeds to give us some rather extraordinary new information, I believe, about the level of participation and context between the Russians and the Trump campaign.
And Victoria, it seemed that Attorney General Barr sort of went out of his way to say, no, the conclusions had nothing to do with Justice Department policy. You're saying the Mueller report itself contradicts that?
Yes. It's very clear that there's a background issue here among lawyers about whether a president can be indicted. The president's own lawyers, and this is in the back of the report for all the legal eagles, the president's own lawyer said he couldn't be charged because, in theory, he's head of the Justice Department. Now, many of us think you can't be a judge in your own cause. That's why we have checks and balances. That's why we have the separation of powers. But this is exactly what the president was saying. And Mueller does a very good job of explaining why that argument can't work, and it's also why he invites Congress, in effect, to take his facts, just as they did in Watergate, to take those facts and for them to conclude whether the president actually committed the crime of obstruction.
And Jeffrey, speaking of Watergate, you know, the president has reportedly said he wanted his Roy Cohn when he was expressing his dissatisfaction with former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Today, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler had harsh words for Attorney General William Barr.
Attorney General Barr appears to have shown an unsettling willingness to undermine his own department in order to protect President Trump. Barr's words and actions suggest he has been disingenuous and misleading in saying the president is clear of wrongdoing.
Now, Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell pushed back on that, standing up for Attorney General Barr.
The guy has just an outstanding reputation. There's no chance at his age and his status within the profession that he's going to go in there and become some kind of political hack for this administration or any other administration. So I trust Bill Barr. I think it's rather laughable to see them turn their guns on him, but that's all they're left with, frankly, is to go after him. It's just some kind of ad hominem attack.
Jeffrey, how do you think history will judge Attorney General Barr?
Well, you know, I think they're going to judge him based upon the president's own words that are quoted in the Mueller report over and over again in regards to Attorney General Sessions, that time and time again, the president, and this was also reported in the press, essentially complained that Sessions was not properly being his lawyer, that he wanted an attorney general who would go out and defend his interests against all investigations, not recognizing, of course, that that's not the attorney general's job. And I'll leave it to my colleague from Georgetown to explain more on that point, because, you know, it really is in further testament that the president, I think, saw this entire investigation and saw the entire political scenario since before the election as part of a discussion of his political future, not necessarily what was best for the nation and what was needed to be discovered for the nation. I mean, I'm actually rather struck by another line that that the investigation proved or offered on, it's actually on page 158, if anybody wants to see, that the president's efforts to influence the investigation were mostly unsuccessful because those surrounded the president declined to carry out orders. I think as my colleague suggested, that Mueller's investigators are trying to explain to Congress that there is a lot there that they need to address further, and that this is actually time for a constitutional remedy. And the Constitution is very clear that Congress is the next batter up, if you will.
And Victoria, I want to get to some callers, but just on that point really quickly, chime in a little bit about that point that Jeffrey was making, that the attorney general's job is he's the attorney general of the United States, and even the White House counsel, Don McGahn, his job is that of the counsel for the White House, for the presidency. Based on this report, how did those two carry out that goal?
Well, I think Don McGahn will come out as a hero. He was told to lie for the president on more than one occasion, and he offered to resign. He, along with others, refused to accept the line that the president was, in essence, in charge of the Justice Department in a political way, which was the president's personal lawyer's theory, that he could just tell the attorney general who to prosecute and who not to prosecute, because that's not how we understand the rule of law in America. The attorney general is supposed to rule for all of us, not just for the president personally. So I think McGahn will come out quite well. As far as Attorney General Barr, he is a legit lawyer. The problem is that he has a different view. He actually believes, and there is a theory called the unitary executive that was used in the George W. Bush era to lead to torture, that said that the president does get to decide all things. And that's a very dangerous theory. People have tried to get rid of it, but it's come back in the background of this, which says the president, through the attorney general, can determine what can be prosecuted. So Barr's in a tough position here because he did make the final call on the obstruction case.
All right. Well, Liz is calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Hi there, Liz.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. My my comment was just that there seems to be a discussion of whether or not the president was acting unethically or illegally. But, you know, it seems to be a fine line there of whether or not it's illegal. But we definitely know he was acting unethical.
Yeah, so Victoria, and thank you for the call, Liz. Victoria, where is that line between doing something that might be unethical or wrong and crossing the line into criminal culpability?
Well, one of the reasons that I've been pushing very much to stay away from the collusion framework is that the real problem here is disloyal to the United States. The president supported these efforts to go to Russia when he knew or his colleagues must have known that Russia was, in fact, and had been told that Russia was interfering in our election. And that seems just disloyal to me, whether or not that's a crime or not. And it's a very serious one when it comes to our democratic structure. It is for Congress ultimately to make that judgment, it seems to me. But I don't think anybody should go away from the report thinking that the president is exonerated in any ethical or criminal law sense. In fact, the real takeaway is that Russian interference was established beyond doubt and, quote, from the report, the Trump campaign expected to benefit from that. So it may not be a crime for any citizen to associate with criminals and spies, nor to enjoy their favors. But it's surely too low a standard for a president of the United States who takes an oath to take care that the laws be faithfully executed.
Jeffrey, according to the report, when the president learned from Jeff Sessions that special counsel Mueller had been appointed in May of 2017, his reaction was, "Oh, my God, this is terrible. This is the end of my presidency. I'm effed." Yet today, some of our listeners, one on our website, Dave, said, "And President Trump still isn't a secret Russian double agent. Bye bye, Dems. No 2020 victory for you." On Twitter, Andrea said, "And yet not damning enough to warrant a recommendation of charges with Trump like Clinton. It's all about the bottom line. He won this round. Does he come out a winner?"
Oh, boy, that's the biggest question of all, and I don't think it's actually going to be resolved anytime soon. Going back to the first caller's question, which relates to yours as well, on this fine point of whether or not the president has committed a crime or something that is harmful or unethical or unbecoming a president, if you will, if the next remedy is in fact congressional, as I think the Mueller report is suggesting, and as the Constitution would suggest, that is to say, if it's now up to the House of Representatives to decide if they want to take action against the president and send it to be judged by the Senate, the real question here is not actually a legal one, in the sense that the president of the United States does not have to commit a crime on the books in order to do something which is an impeachable offense or which is a high crime and misdemeanor. You know, if we go back and look at the actual text of what the Constitution's authors were discussing, especially in late June of 1787, they were very clear that they were interested in people who interested in eliminating presidents who perhaps would do things that are against the best interests of the country, that were harming the country, or that saw their interests as more important than the country, doing things that were high crimes as opposed to a regular crime, a high crime being something that harms the body politic. I think that's actually the question that people need to be addressing, is not, is there some statute we can find that the president has violated, but rather, is this what we want a president to be doing?
Back to the phones. Beth is calling from Mount Vision, New York. Hi, Beth.
Oh, it's me. Hello.
What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I have a question and a comment. My question is that during the campaign, now President Trump, welcomed the WikiLeaks dump of all the information and emails and stuff from the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton. And he also said if Russia was hacking, to bring it on, bring some more on. And I'm wondering why that is not playing into this whole thing right now.
Thank you for that question, Beth. I'm going to give that to Victoria. Why, when we all saw the president ask WikiLeaks to get Hillary Clinton's emails, how come that didn't amount to any actionable crime?
Well, the Mueller report did say that the Trump campaign expected to benefit from the criminal actions of Russians and WikiLeaks. There's no doubt. One of the problems here is that people have been expecting some secret thing to come out about this when the president did everything in public. He did that in a speech. And that's a very unusual position to be in. If you're prosecuting something, you expect people to be secreting away their conversations instead of giving a campaign speech. And that's why I think we have to go back to what my colleague just said, which is, was this the right thing to do for a candidate to cozy up to someone, Julian Assange or, you know, the Secret Service and Putin, with Putin, that basically have been enemies to our nation, have been known to be enemies of our nation? That's a deeper judgment than simply whether there isn't, as my colleague said, an ordinary crime.
Victoria, kind of compare this from a historical standpoint, and I'd love Jeffrey's view too. Compare this to your experience with Iran-Contra.
Well, I think there are some things that are similar. In Iran-Contra, everyone kept talking about the diversion. And we had a joke among a constitutional law professor there and I were working on it. We said the diversion was the diversion. And here, collusion is the diversion. Mm-hmm. the question is really much more serious than collusion would suggest. So in that case, they're similar. Is this a greater threat to our polity? You bet. I'm not one to go out and talk on the news much. And I have been rather upset by this, largely because I've never seen anything in my history since I was a baby lawyer on that investigation that amounts to such a direct attack on our electoral apparatus, on the very functioning of democracy. And so I have been very concerned that people understand the difference between the danger to the democracy and what might be a crime, because I've taught criminal law for 15 years. Mm. And I do think this is not parallel to Iran-Contra. In Iran-Contra, you had cash passed in the old executive office building. You had foreign policy done by some folks inside the NSC.
Yeah.
And the president lied. But this is about our very electoral system. And the question is, can we trust this president who kept saying this was a hoax, that the Russians didn't interfere? Can we trust this president to make sure that our electoral system is safe for the next election?
Jeffrey, what do you think?
You know, I think I'm glad we're able to bring in Iran-Contra, and I want to go one historical event back further, if you will, to Watergate. And, you know, obviously I think everyone has been expecting this to play out in some form or fashion as Watergate did. And I think it's important to recognize that each of the historical examples that involved impeachment really did ultimately play out differently. But here's a potential similarity that could shed some light on what's going to happen, which is that most of the things in the report that we read today were not a surprise because they were revealed or there was excellent reporting. This is a wonderful summation and it was written very nicely, but it doesn't actually tell us too many things that we didn't already know. It put some flesh on the bones. We already knew where the bones were. In the Watergate hearings, on the other hand, there was a steady drip, 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 just like we saw here. But then at the very end, when we had the what we call the smoking gun tape, that is to say the revelation not only that there were tapes, but we actually could hear the president's own voice talking about how to commit crimes and how to avoid prosecution, how to conspire against the Congress in many ways and against the Justice Department. That was such an incredible shot from the dark, if you will, that it shocked the American people. And if we look at President Nixon's approval ratings, they actually were relatively steady, especially among Republicans, up until that moment where they just fell off a cliff. I think we're going to actually see the opposite here, which is that because we've had a steady, steady drip, drip, and there isn't that explosion from the dark in this report, as I read it, I think that the American public is largely going to say, well, this has already been baked into our politics for the last 2 years, and there's not going to be an erosion of the president's support of the same quality.
All right, Victoria and Jeffrey, hold tight. We are reading and reading between the lines of the Mueller report and looking at what it says about this president, this country, and this moment in history. You can join the conversation. What's your question for our panel? What stands out to you most on this day? What is the biggest thing that you see in this report? I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is a special evening broadcast of On Point.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
Smart journalism, fascinating topics, words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're breaking down the Mueller report. You can join the conversation. What should happen next? We're talking with Jeffrey Engel, who is the director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University, and with Victoria Nurse, a professor at Georgetown University Law Center. Now, Jeffrey, today, Kellyanne Conway, counselor to the president, told Fox News that the Mueller report fully exonerates President Trump. Let's listen.
What matters is what the Department of Justice and the special counsel concluded here, which is no collusion, no obstruction, and complete exoneration, as the president says. This has been a political proctology exam, and he's emerging with a clean bill of health. There's no other way to look at it.
Political proctology exam. She also said she was accepting apologies from the press. Jeffrey, how did you mention that a lot of this stuff we already knew, and it was because of reporting on what was going on. But, you know, a lot of folks expected the press to get today wrong and to report things poorly. How do you grade them?
You know, I think we should all try to eliminate a political proctology exam from our lexicon as quickly as possible. But I would add that this is really absolutely fascinating to me. As I put on my historian cap and I try to think, how are historians going to write about these issues in 40 or 50 years? I think that is going to be one of the quotes that they use, including in addition to President Trump's own declaration that he was totally exonerated, to demonstrate that we are living in a moment where people are choosing to silo themselves so much that the truth is completely malleable depending on who you choose to listen to. I mean, you know, I can show footnotes. You can show footnotes now. We've all got the Mueller report that has footnotes that says flat out, we do not exonerate the president. Mm. And yet the president of the United States can say, I am totally exonerated, and the evidence doesn't appear to matter to the minds of his supporters and to those who are choosing to listen to him. I think it really does make us question the basic foundations not only of our democracy but also of our existence if people are choosing to live in the reality that they want to. I mean, I don't want to get philosophical about that, but this is really quite profoundly amazing that the president just flat out said something which we all can read with our own eyes is not true, and there doesn't seem to be any blowback.
Well, let's go to the phones. Bill is calling from Troy, Alabama. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great.
Hey, I'm listening to this conversation, and I don't normally listen to NPR a whole lot, but I appreciate your show. I understand what the law professor from Georgetown is saying. My view is the opposite. The William Barr said, there is no collusion. That was his conclusion, and he's more well qualified to summarize the report than the rest of us. So what I hear is a bunch of Democrats holding on to the hope that there is collusion because they've been talking about it for 2 years. It's probably the most thorough investigation I've heard in my lifetime, and I'm over 60 years old. So my thoughts are the opposite, that you have people who are hoping there's collusion when really what it sounds like is that the Mueller investigation left it up in the air. William Barr summarized it by saying there's no collusion.
Well, Bill, thanks for your call. I want to give Victoria a chance to respond to that.
Well, I'll just read from the report, and this isn't in a footnote. It's in the report more than once. I don't know how many times, but it says, "This report does not conclude that the president committed a crime. It also does not exonerate him." So the point was that Mueller is in a very difficult position. He believes that it would be unethical, actually, to indict a sitting president for a number of reasons, including fairness to Trump. And that he's very careful about that. I don't think that this is the report, certainly doesn't sound like what a Democrat would say. You have to read it. Careful legal report.
Yeah, but Attorney General Barr said that he disagreed with parts, particularly some of the observations about obstruction of justice, for example. Mueller didn't come to a conclusion on that, but Attorney General Barr said that he and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein disagreed with him.
Well, I think I'd like to know why they're saying that, because one theory is, and it's a theory refuted by Mueller at the back of the report, but about which constitutionalists disagree, is that the president is in charge of the Justice Department, and the president can determine through his political appointees how to adjudicate or when to adjudicate a case. And so I'd like to know if it's about that constitutional theory, if it's about a different idea about the difficulty of proof of obstruction of justice, because there are many reasons why the attorney general might have said that. But it's not clear to me from the 4-page report why he said that there was no obstruction of justice.
All right. Jeffrey, go ahead.
I think that's a fascinating legal question, but I think if we think back to the way that the framers actually wanted these sorts of situations to play out, I'm not sure that Attorney General Barr's opinion matters any more than yours or mine or the caller's. It's nice that he and his associates have an opinion, whether they think that there's a crime committed or not, or whether they think that he should be charged or not, the president was referring to. That doesn't matter. It's now the only people who matter in this context are people in the House of Representatives, and they have to decide what they want to do with this information. So I appreciate the legal analysis from the Attorney General. During Watergate, the hearings, the committee received opinions from many lawyers, many historians, many jurists, many authors, people from across the political spectrum to try to give a better perspective so the House members could make a more informed judgment. They're the ones whose opinions are the only ones who matter at this point, I think.
All right. Byron is calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Byron.
Hi. Hi, Kim. The thing that stood out to me the most, and there was quite a bit, was a comment that, according to Mueller, that McGahn made to him when Trump was questioning him about the things they had discussed. And in that, Trump said, "I never had a lawyer take notes." And that just, the implications of that admission, I think, are just staggering. Like, what sort of environment does this man operate in which he's never had a lawyer that takes notes? That's all I have.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Byron. Victoria, before I throw it to you, I will say in full disclosure, when I used to practice law, I did take notes as part of my job. What do you think about that?
I think it's pretty damning. I think that lawyers don't take notes when they don't want to be called to account. And good lawyers do take notes, in part because they have to. And I was pleased to see that Don McGahn actually went to pack up his things. That's what a good lawyer does when in that kind of position. But I do think in general, we've seen this before with Michael Cohen. I mean, the kinds of lawyers that have been hired by this president have been fixers, to quote, the press. And fixers don't take notes, I don't think.
One lawyer that at least one member of Congress wants to hear more from is Robert Mueller. House Judiciary Committee Chairman Democrat Jerry Nadler called for him to testify before the committee.
The report concluded there was substantial evidence, in quotes, that President Trump attempted to prevent an investigation into his campaign and his own conduct. Page 76, page 78, page 90, page 157, volume 2. That is why I have formally requested that Special Counsel Mueller testify before the House Judiciary Committee as soon as possible so we can get some answers to these critical questions.
Jeffrey, if Special Counsel Mueller appears before Congress, what will that moment represent?
Must-see TV, for one thing. though I think, personally, I imagine that we will get the... I got to tell you, I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anybody will. I think we're going to see the thinking behind why it was, of course, that the special prosecutor decided not to render a full judgment. And I expect that he's going to say something along the lines of, that is not my job. It's your job, Congress. I'd be curious, honestly, to see what my legal companion would say, because I don't know what he would say that necessarily would shed more light based upon what the conclusions he's offered.
Well, Victoria, what would you like to hear from Mueller?
I'd like to hear more about why he decided to come to no conclusion, either way, on the obstruction counts. I agree with Jeffrey that this is in the American people's corner right now, and many people, unfortunately, have already made up their mind, perhaps due to the great reporting of many outlets. But I really think they need to hear more from Mueller about how to look at this in terms of emphasis. He's a very stand-up guy. He will provide, I think, a very measured accounting, but he will emphasize, in my view, more of the negative than the positive for the president. So it will be an antidote to the continued claim by some that this is a hoax, because he's afraid that people will take that and, you know, history will run with that. So I think he'll be aware of his position in history. I think he will be an extraordinarily balanced witness. And I think it will be, as Jeffrey says, must-see TV.
And Jeffrey, one body that still has a say in this is, of course, the House, which if there are articles of impeachment, that's where they will be brought. Nancy Pelosi set that bar really high. What do you think the path to potential impeachment is for this president, given the fact that you wrote a book on impeachment?
You know, I have to say I wrestled the question for 2 years now, like everyone else, about what to make of all this evidence. And I have two distinct and overlapping conclusions. You know, the first is that I think it's very clear that the Constitution's framers would look at the actions of this president and want Congress, if not to impeach, then at least to begin discussing impeachment. I think there's really no way to read the Constitutional Conventions, to read the Federalist Constitutional Convention, to read the Federalist Papers, and not come away with appreciation that what we're seeing here is, in fact, what Madison and the others considered a high crime. That being said, the history of impeachment, it really suggests that Nancy Pelosi's viewpoint is the more prudent one, which is to say there really is no good example in history of impeachment working when one side not only didn't have the numbers in the Senate, but more importantly, when there wasn't some clear smoking gun evidence, as we have in the case of Nixon. Had the Mueller report given us something that every single American with a right, could, with clear eyes, could look at and say, yes, that's something I find distasteful or if not illegal, that would be a different question. But the fact that we're still having this discussion this afternoon about what it means tells me that Nancy Pelosi is reading the tea leaves right, that impeachment would not be successful, so she does not want to go down that road.
All right, back to our phones. Ben is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Kim. I'll be brief, but I understand the report does indicate that Russia was successful in accessing a couple voter registration systems, and taking into account that the campaign also provided polling data to Russian operatives and the Russian social media campaign, it seems very troubling. And there's also a lot we don't know about Manafort's involvement, given his lying to the special prosecutor. And the report also indicates that people deleted evidence, communications. So I'm just concerned that we still don't have the whole picture, and the report might have established insufficient evidence for prosecution, but to me, there's still a lot of dark clouds hanging over this this issue.
Thanks for your call, Ben. Victoria, Paul Manafort, we haven't talked about him yet. He did get prosecuted and is looking at a lengthy jail sentence. But talk more about what we've learned about Manafort and also about Russian interference efforts.
Well, let me talk mostly about Russian interference, because I think the report makes it clear that this is no hoax. I mean, it was not simply about dumping Hillary Clinton's emails. It was about targeting voting systems. It was targeting individuals. It was targeting them with social media efforts, which has been reported before. But this was – the report links it all up in a way that I think if we knew the bones, the flesh makes it very concerning for those of us who care about the election system, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Manafort's full role, I don't think, is clear because Gates has not been sentenced. There are a few details about Gates being in a car with Donald Trump and getting a call about WikiLeaks dumps. So I think there are some issues that, as the caller said, have not been fleshed out. And I would hope that Congress would, as it has in other investigations, issue its own reports, not necessarily with respect to impeachment. Congress has the duty to legislate, has the duty to protect elections. It has specific constitutional authority to do that. And I would hope it would issue a report specifically about the election interference, what measures have been taken by the president, by the Congress, to protect us from this kind of organized campaign.
And Jeffrey, you have less than a minute left. If Congress does issue its own report, what does history give them as a guide as they move forward?
You know, it gives them as a guide, first of all, that details that are embarrassing to the president are not going to be useful to their politics, in the sense that one of the things that we really remember about the Starr report is not necessarily what the president was ultimately in trouble for, but rather for the salacious nature of the details. So I think Mueller has done a wonderful job here of essentially giving us the bare bones without a lot of the color, or at least I suspect without all the color that he could have given. And I would recommend that Congress, you know, try to stay in their reports as close to things which are, you know, neutral, observable facts as possible, because anything else I think is going to drive up the partisan nature of this even higher than we already have.
And I think we are nowhere near the end of this, even at the conclusion of this report. Jeffrey Engel, director of the Center for Presidential History at Southern Methodist University, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to talk to you.
Victoria Nurse, a professor at Georgetown University Law Center, thank you so much for your time.
Good to be with you.
And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website at onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point.